Jai Radha Madhava Kundabihari. Kopi Dana Balaba Girivanadari. Kopi Dana Balaba Girivanadari. Sodananana Braja Dhanaranjana. Yasodananana Braja Dhanaranjana. Jamunatirha Vanachari. Jamunatirha Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kundabihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kundabihari. Gopi Dana Balava Girivanadari. Gopi Dana Balava Girivanadari. Yasoda nanana Braja Dhanaranjana. Yasoda nanana Braja Dhanaranjana. Yamunatirha Vanachari. Jamunatirha Vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kundabihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kundabihari.
Singing was so powerful. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Prabhudakacharya Asadhara Sadushi Sriman His Divine Grace Shalesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Raj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Premanande Hari. All glories to the sound devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Koravani Vicharne, Nirvishesha, Shinvadi, Pasprabhya, De Siddharne. Oma Gyana Timurandasya, Gyananjana Salakaya, Chaksur Militam Yena, Tasmai Shri Guruvena Maha, Shri Chaitanyamanobishtam, Stapitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham, Dadati swa padanti kam. Pandeham shigra shiyuta para kamalam. Shigrum vaishnavam cha. Shirupam sagrajatam. Sahagana raganatam vitam dham sajivam. Sarvaitam sabadutam parijana saitam. Krishna chaitanya devam. Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita
Shiva Sakant Vitamscha. Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate. Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. Tapta Kanchina Gorangi Radhe Brindavaneshri. Prishubhana Sudadevi Pranamami Hari Priye. Vanchakapa Tribhyascha Kripa Sinuvyevacha. Patitanam Vavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 51, The Deliverance of Muchakunda, Text 32. Shira Prajagara Shanto. Nidraya Pahatendriyaha Shaye Smin Vijane Kamam Kenap Yutapito Duna Shira Prajagara Shanto Nidraya Pahatendriyaha Shayasmin Vijane Kamam Kenap Yutapito Duna. Shayasmin Vijane Kamam Kenapyapitito Janaha Mataji. Shira Prajagara Shanto Nidraya Paitendriyaha Shaye Svin Vijane Kamam Kenapyat Pavito Duna. Chira, for a long time. Prajagara, because of remaining awake. Shranta, fatigued. Nidraya, by sleep. Pahata, covered over. Indriya, my senses. Shaye, I have been lying. Means lying down, not that he's been lying. Asmin, in this Vijane, solitary place. Kamam, as pleases me. Kena api, by someone. Utapita, awakened. Aduna, now. Translation. I was fatigued after remaining awake for a long time, and my senses were overwhelmed by sleep. Thus I slept comfortably here in this solitary place until just now someone woke me. Sounds like this could be in any story. It's hard to commentate. Does anyone have any questions about this? So I'll keep on reading. The man who woke me was burned to ashes by the reaction of his sins. Just then I saw you possessing a glorious appearance and the power to chastise your enemies. Purport, Kala Yavana had declared himself the enemy of Sri Krishna and the Yadu dynasty. Although Muchakunda, Sri Krishna, through Muchakunda, Sri Krishna destroyed the opposition of that foolish barbarian. How long is it taking you to come up to the 50? How many, like a year even, reading the 10th canto? What's that? At least a year. Probably take you 2-3 more years to finish, maybe 4 years, 3 years to finish everything. Your unbearably brilliant effulgence overwhelms our strength, and thus we cannot fix our gaze upon you, O exalted one. You are to be honored by all embodied beings. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus addressed by the king, the supreme personality of Godhead, origin of all creation, smiled, and then replied to him in a voice as deep as the rumbling of clouds. The supreme lord said, my dear friend, I have taken thousands of births, lived thousands of lives, and accepted thousands of names. In fact, my births, activities, and names are limitless, and thus I cannot even count them. After many lifetimes, someone might count the dust particles on the earth. That would be quite an endeavor, wouldn't it? But no one can ever finish counting my qualities, activities, names, and births. O King, the greatest sages enumerate my births and activities which take place throughout the three phases of time, but never do they reach the end of them. Nonetheless, O friend, I will tell you about my current birth, name, and activities. Kindly hear. Some time ago, Lord Brahma requested me to protect religious principles and destroy the demons were burdening the earth. Thus I descended in the Yadu dynasty in the home of Anakandundubi. Indeed, because I am the son of Vasudev, people call me Vasudev. I have killed Kalanimi, reborn as Kangsa, as well as Pralamba and other enemies of the pious. And now, O king, this barbarian has been burned to ashes by your piercing glance. Since in the past you repeatedly prayed to me, I have personally come to this cave to show you mercy, for I am affectionately inclined to my devotees. Purport, it's apparent from this verse that Muchakunda was a devotee of the Supreme Lord. He had prayed for the Lord's association, and now Sri Krishna granted his fervent request. Now choose some benedictions from me, O saintly king. I will fulfill all your desires. One who has satisfied me need never again lament. Purport, the Acharyas explain that we lament when we feel incomplete, when we have lost something, or when we fail to achieve something desirable. One who has satisfied Krishna and thus attained the Lord's mercy will never be troubled in these ways. Lord Krishna is a reservoir of all pleasure, and he enjoys sharing his spiritual bliss with all living beings. We need only cooperate with the Supreme Lord. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Muchakunda bowed down to the Lord when he heard this. Remembering the words of the sage Garga, he joyfully recognized Krishna to be the Supreme Lord Narayan. The king then addressed him as follows. Purport, although the Lord here appears as four-handed Narayan, we may say that Muchakunda was addressing Sri Krishna. All this is taking place within the context of Krishna Lila, the pastimes of Lord Krishna. It is well known to Vaishnavas that the four-handed forms of Vishnu or Narayan are expansions of Sri Krishna. Thus, within the pastimes of Lord Krishna, there may also appear Vishnu Lila, the activities of Vishnu. Such are the qualities and activities of the Supreme Godhead. Deeds that for us would be extraordinary and even impossible are commonplace, effortless pastimes for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Śrīla Śrīdhara Swami informs us that Muchikunda was aware of the prediction of the ancient sage Garga that in the 28th millennium the Supreme Lord would descend. According to the Acharya Vishwanath, Garga Muni further informed Muchikunda that he would personally see the Lord. Now this is all happening. Translation. Sri Muchikunda said, O Lord, people of this world, both men and women, are bewildered by your illusory energy. Unaware of their real benefit, they do not worship you, but instead seek happiness by entangling themselves in family affairs, which are actually sources of misery. Purport, Muchikunda immediately makes it clear that he is not going to ask the Lord for material blessings. He has advanced spiritually far beyond those who try to exploit religion for all kinds of material benefits. Artha means value, and the negation of this word, anartha, means that which is valueless or useless. Thus, the term anarthadrik indicates that those whose vision is focused on valueless things, who have not understood that what actual anartha or value is. All that glitters is not gold, and Muchikunda here emphatically states that we should not ruin our spiritual chances by entangling ourselves in the fool's gold of bodily relationships. We are meant to love the Lord. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatyate Satarna. 10th canto is the canto of pastimes. And we're supposed to have understood all the other 9 cantos. Matter of fact, we're supposed to have memorized all the other 9 cantos before we get to the 10th canto. So I'm sure everyone here knows all the verses for all the 9 cantos and realize the philosophy. Otherwise, you wouldn't be sitting here listening to the 10th canto. Yes? That's good. So here, you just have to add a 0 to it and you get to the 10. But here, some basic principles are also being explained again and again in different circumstances, namely the question of benedictions. Actually, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, upadraksha namanta cha. Upadraksha namanta cha bharta bhokta maheshwara paramatma tu chapyuto dehesmin purusha para. That there is someone else, there's an other. Sometimes I have on the internet, there's others out there. Well, there's another one inside. There's a driver and there's the passenger. We happen to be the passenger, and Krishna inside the body is the driver. And as the driver, he understands our desires, just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it. We may imagine ourselves be the ultimate doers, the one who are creating our circumstances, etc., etc. But actually, according to Bhagavad Gita, anadi vam nirgunadvat paramatmayam avyam, sharira stopi kontiya nakaroti nanalipyate, that those who can see with the eyes of eternity can see that the soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of material nature. Despite contact with the material body or Arjuna, the soul is neither doing anything nor is he entangled. So that's quite mysterious for the conditioned soul. That, first of all, that we're transcendental, and that we're eternal, the soul is transcendentally eternal, and we're actually not entangled in the material world. And despite contact with the material body or Arjuna, the soul is neither doing anything, nor is he entangled. So it appears that when I move my arms, I'm moving my hands and the arms, whatever. But actually, although I may have my input, in other words, the soul may desire, but his desire is not sufficient for an activity to happen. There has to be an arrangement through Krishna's energy. Ultimately, Krishna senses our desire, just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it. And according to our desire, Krishna arranges the material world according to how we deserve. And of course, there are varieties of desire. Just like, for instance, I may, somehow or another in my mind, they pop in the desire to go to see a movie, for instance. But at the same time, my intelligence will tell me it's not a good idea to see the movie. So therefore, my desire becomes modified by my intelligence. If I have no intelligence, as soon as the desire comes into my mind to see the movie, then immediately I walk out of here and see the movie. But you see, I'm not moving, so it means I must have some intelligence. Or the movies are so bad around here, it's not even worthwhile getting up. But somehow or another, my intelligence has some control over my desires. And therefore, although a desire may appear within my mind, I may not act upon it. I may not, first of all, we have thinking about it, and then feeling. My intelligence will decide how I feel about it. Whether I like it, whether it's likable or dislikable, or how much I should like it, whether I should put into action with my senses. So desire may be there, but desire is modified by the intelligence, and therefore through thinking, feeling, and willing, therefore it may manifest itself in different ways. And Krishna understands what we're choosing, what intelligence we're choosing, what desires we're choosing. If we choose material desires, then our intelligence becomes subservient to the material desires. I choose a material desire, and then I use my intelligence how to fulfill it. Of course, as Krishna had said, we're not doing anything, but we're thinking about doing things, we could say. And those things are being manifested through the gross and subtle bodies by the illusory energy, by the material energy, or by the spiritual energy if we decide to do something spiritual. So we have a capacity to desire by our free will, and different options are being presented to us, either material or spiritual, and all we're doing is choosing those options, amongst those options. And the rest is carried out by the material nature. So we have a say in what happens, and we have a responsibility what happens. Because if I choose the right desire, then I go back to Godhead. If I choose the wrong desires, I become a dog, if I'm lucky. And if I choose so-called right desires, then I go to the heavenly planets. But Bhagavatam says that those are not exactly the right desires, because I have to come back to this material planet, to these earthly planets again, and soon I may become a dog. Even I live on the heavenly planets for some billions of years, but a billion years is not a very long time in terms of time eternal. One moment in Brahma's life is 100,000 of our years, 1 second. Therefore, a million years in our lifetime is a mere 10 seconds in Brahma's life. So a billion years is just some minutes. Just enough time for Brahma to eat prasad, take some rest. In the meantime, we may become a dog. We may go up to the heavenly planets and live there for some, you know, during Brahma's lunch break, and then come back down here and become a dog. So that wouldn't be very good. If you had a vacation during lunch, and then at the end of the vacation you became a dog, you wouldn't be very happy about it. You wouldn't be able to enjoy your lunch very well. Another 5 minutes, I'm a dog. Rawr. Especially you can walk around here and see how miserable the dogs are. Their brains are just like, oh, they're always barking, most of them. Imagine where their brains are, what they're thinking about. They're not thinking about Krishna, that's for sure. So that tendency towards material enjoyment is being cultivated by the external. In other words, there's so much opportunity for cultivating material desires nowadays. We're being trained to systematically cultivate material desires. That's considered normal, respectable. And if one is not cultivating material desires, they're considered to be liable to the interference of some drug treatment, or maybe they'll be given some psychiatric help, shock treatment, wake them up to material desires. Zzz. Are you there yet? Not quite. Because people have no appreciation that such a thing as spirit. They only see the material energy. They only believe in sense gratification, and therefore that's what they're desiring. And desires are just like our prayers, actually, to the Supreme Lord. We may think they're just desires, and it doesn't really matter what I desire. I can think of anything, and there's no real effect. Externally, I can be a very respectable gentleman, and inside my mind, I'm playing video games, killing everyone I see. And people think, well, that's all right, because it's just mental. But it's also, of course, in this age, we're not getting reaction for our mental thoughts, but those mental thoughts will turn into activities in the course of time. We have to do something. Therefore, if I'm constantly contemplating the objects of the senses, then I'm losing my intelligence. And as my intelligence becomes diminished, therefore, gradually, these things will manifest as feeling and willing. And then I get the reaction to my activities. And if my activities are in the mode of ignorance, then I have to travel down to the lower species of life again. We may say, well, how can I ever desire to do those things? But then again, we can see that as society has cultivated systematically the modes of passion, then gradually the modes of ignorance awaken within people. It's just that's how the material nature works. As we become more and more covered by the illusory energy, as we sink deep, lower into the modes of material nature, then things which would be considered to be completely abominable now become desirable. And we can see that in modern society. As the society has sunk deeper and deeper into the modes of ignorance, things which were considered abominable years ago are now considered natural and normal and desirable. Now, for instance, in America, they had this movement for legalizing marijuana, legalizing prostitution. They've already legalized everything else. Then they'll have euthanasia. Then it'll be... There's so many conceptions that are on being put out by people in the mode of ignorance, and they're just a little bit ahead of their time, that's all. Because the society's heading towards the darkest regions of ignorance. Just like one doctor was putting forward the idea that if your child is born and you don't like the child, you can just kill it then. Because he's a disturbance. And of course, it seems unreasonable. One time, the person who wrote Gulliver's Travel, Jonathan Swift, he was also a satirist. So he wrote one article because in Ireland at that time, there was a famine, a potato famine. So he was suggesting that the way of solving the potato famine is you take every child who's below 1 year old and you slaughter them and eat them. And that would solve the potato famine. That would solve the famine. So he was just being sarcastic. But people actually took it seriously. They said he had a good idea. So that idea is just a little bit ahead of the time. There are undoubtedly restaurants in different parts of the world where they're already doing that. They don't want to waste a good thing. They're eating everything. Dogs, snakes, why not children? Because that's the mode of ignorance. And that is the future. That will be not considered desirable. That will be considered normal. That's why you have children, so you can eat them. That's at the end of Kali Yuga. That's predicted, that people have children just so they can have a feast. It'll be on their birthday, they'll have a feast, but they'll be the meal. Maybe they'll give them a few days, fatten them up a little bit. So, like we fatten up turkeys. So this is, at the end of class, so this is just the mode of ignorance. I guess that's as low as it gets. But we can see that as society is degrading, all these things which are considered previously unquestionably bad are even being questioned now. Even nowadays, at the end of movies, the hero doesn't always win. Sometimes the villain wins. People have become more like the villain than the hero. And therefore, not to disappoint people, the villain sometimes wins. The good person who's trying to do good gets defeated. And people go, yeah, that's it. Therefore, Muchakunda, he was being offered some desire. But that's the nature. You can fulfill any desire. But fulfilling desires is just a symptom of the fact, as it says here, we want to fulfill desires because we think we need something other than Krishna consciousness. But if one is Krishna conscious, he doesn't feel he needs anything. And one is not Krishna conscious, he'll feel he needs everything. There's no limit. You fulfill one desire, and then you'll have hundreds of more desires fulfilled after fulfilling that desire. Therefore, the history of people who got the means to fulfill desires is not that they became happy. They became more distressed than before they had the means to fulfill their desires. Look at in the internet where people have won the lottery, won tens of millions of dollars in the lottery, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars, how miserable their lives have become trying to fulfill all the desires. What the percentage of the people who gain $100 million in the lottery, how many of them commit suicide? Because they thought, now I have the means to satisfy all my desires, now I'll be happy, but actually they become more miserable. They become besieged by all these so-called relatives that they never knew about, coming to fulfill their desires. They get friends they never even thought about, And when they give the money away to their relatives, then they utilize it for sinful activities and become more distressed than before. So everyone is trying to, whatever relationship they have is all now based upon business. People are constantly trying to get something from them. And when they give it, then people utilize it for less than pious activities. And therefore, instead of becoming happy, they become the supplier of misery to everyone. But this is not what is being advertised or trained in modern society. That if you can get money, then you can gratify your desires and then you'll be happy. Although, in the history of the universe, no one has become permanently happy by simply trying to gratify their desires. Therefore, Muchakunda is refusing any kind of material benediction. Not because he's living in a cave for so long, he can't see the light, or he became confused, or he couldn't remember what to think about, or there are no iPods to desire. There wasn't enough advertisement going on. Therefore, he couldn't think of anything good to think of, to desire. Therefore, he got stumped. Krishna says, whatever you want, I'll give you. And you go, well, can you come back tomorrow? I'll think about it. It's a little early to ask me. Besides that, I've been sleeping for so long. They'll ask you, can I go back to sleep? It's the only thing I can think about. I'm only sleeping for a few million years. They promised you I could sleep for 5. No, he didn't ask for anything, but ultimately he'll ask for pure devotional service, which is generally what he's asked for in Srimad Bhagavatam, because if one has pure devotional service, then the happiness is so great, then there's no more material desires to desire. There's no desire to fulfill desires. So I'll stop there and thank you. Any questions? Is that the right time? Or that one there? 8:12? I can't answer that.
I was just curious. It seems like, you desire a certain thing and it causes a certain mentality which causes certain desires and it causes a whole situation to unfold. It just doesn't seem so fair.
Well, here's the person to complain about. He set it up. Watch it.
I'm trying to understand how that works because I know it's ultimately, 100%,
Well, if we have intelligence, then we have control over the situation. And we can know what to desire and what not to desire. And if we have no intelligence, we don't hear spiritual knowledge, then we have no desire. We have no control over the situation. And therefore we get entangled. So that's up to us. Krishna is making available spiritual knowledge, therefore he comes repeatedly, either as Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya, or as some incarnation, and he distributes his knowledge. But if the soul refuses to listen to Krishna, then that's what the material world is all about.
It just seems more complicated. It seems more complicated because... you desire one thing, which, like I was saying, leads to a whole situation to unfold toward that, which influences how you desire, because you desire this
one
thing.
Well, that's the way material nature works. We're not supposed to do that. Material life, we're supposed to think about what Krishna wants us to do. Either if you're a part of the Vedic culture, you think about what your duty is, and if you're part of Krishna consciousness, you think about what Krishna wants you to do is your duty. And if we don't do that, then we get carried away by the modes of nature. The modes of material nature will generally bring us down into the lower and lower modes.
So the biggest favor we could give anyone is to try to give them Prabhupada's books. And just like myself, I was in a really low situation before I got Prabhupada's books and for many years after, but it started bringing me out, giving me insight, realization, everything that you get from, studying Prabhupada's books and then ultimately getting association with devotees, etc. And so I guess that's just more inspiration for us to go out there and try to help these people because otherwise they're finished.
Right. There's anyone who doesn't have Prabhupada's books is finished. There's really no hope. It's hopeless. Yeah, though. Just a question of time before they'll be crawling or swimming or flying.
It seems to that in that situation, the human form has no real meaning. It's not really a human form. It's like a turnaround
Dwi
spot.
Dwi Padapashu, two-legged animals.
Yeah, because they're going to turn around and go right back down and start all over.
Yeah, the animals are actually, the lower species are more fortunate because they're going up. The human beings in this age, generally they're going down. So without getting the mercy of Krishna through the disciple succession, one's human form of life is really meaningless. Because after all, how much arrangements human beings have to make to sleep peacefully? But you look at the dogs, they're sleeping so peacefully. You kick the dog and sometimes it just rolls over. So much endeavor for eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So much anxiety. But for the animals, there's no problem. And it's not like when the monkey enjoys sex, that he's not enjoying, only the playboy is enjoying, but he's enjoying just as much. So if one wants sense gratification, the human form of life is rather an inconvenient form. But the animals are just, forms are just suitable for different types of sense gratification. Of course, there's also birth, death, old age, and disease for them, and there's suffering, but there's more sense gratification in the animal form than in the human form. Suffering is in every form, but there's more gratification in the lower species, with less endeavor at least. Dog doesn't worry about how much he has in the bank. They ever meet a dog worrying about paying the mortgage? Every dog, all he needs is a good bone and life is good. He doesn't worry about anything else. Contented. Doesn't think about the dog that left him last year, his, that beautiful Cocker Spaniel. He just can't forget her. No, anything that comes along is nice, is all right for him. So it's a whole different world. But that's what human beings are developing into. Somehow or another, because of the previous saintly people who have visited this planet, therefore there's still some human consciousness left. Therefore there's some, what they call morality or whatever, but that's rapidly diminishing. When I used to do the airport, you know, on Christmas Eve, there was some sense of, for at least 20 minutes, some sense of religiosity, but that's disappeared long ago. Now it's 100% a pagan holiday. Shopping frenzy. Yes.
The entanglement of material desires can come to an end. How does one become completely disentangled? Because it's such an entangling, absorbing material energy is completely, we're controlled by it, our material bodies, our minds.
Well, if we have transcendental knowledge, we can accept that transcendental knowledge and we'll become controlled by transcendental knowledge. If you accept the knowledge coming from higher authorities and agree to it, desire it, then we become controlled by the internal energy of Krishna. So in the association of devotees, we can hear about the philosophy, and if we understand something practical and put it into effect, then we become controlled by it.
How about the reactions to all the previous other sinful activities? How do we become free from those?
By association with Krishna. Krishna frees us from them when he sees that we're sincere. According to our sincerity, he proportionally frees us. We become aloof from the desires and instead desire Krishna, and Krishna will take them away so they don't bother us anymore. But if we, just like if you run up to a tree and you grab hold of the tree and say, let me go, let me go. Well, the tree's not holding on to you, you're holding on to the tree. So if you just let go of the tree, there's no problem. So the material desires are not holding on to us, we're holding on to them. We just let them go, then they'll just go away. But if you're holding on to the tree, let me go, let me go. And someone comes along and says, sir, why don't you just let the tree go? It's not, oh, you and your philosophy. You don't understand how I'm suffering because this tree got me. So for one who's determined to hold on to the tree, it doesn't matter how much philosophy you tell them, that actually just let go of the material desires, do something better, utilize Krishna's energy in his service, you won't be bothered by all these material desires. But they'll say, oh, you're a fanatic. Itevidu swartikatim hivishnu tarashi aye bahya artamanina. because they don't know that the goal is to reach Krishna. Therefore, they've taken so many temporary, insignificant goals as their goal of life. And because they're misled by blind leaders, they themselves are blind. Therefore, both of them get more and more entangled in material energy. Therefore, naisham matistavadarukramangrim. We have to take shelter of those who are taking shelter of those who are taking shelter of those who are actually free from all material desires and can lead us to the positive spiritual life, spiritual desires. Anything else?
They're just, the way it's all put, I understand. I think I follow what the, you know, chain of events you're explaining, and of course it's the way it is, but it just seems like there's no meaning to the word free will.
Yes, there's a little meaning to it. Not as much as we think, because we think we're God. We can do whatever we want. But that's wrong. That's why we're disappointed. But our free will, as it says in the Bhagavatam, in the second canto, second chapter, consists of either orientating our desires towards the true spiritual conception that we're spiritual beings, the servants of Krishna, or orientating our desires towards the ignorant misconception of identifying ourselves with this body and therefore orientating our desires towards sense gratification. So we have, that's our choice, that's all. Every moment we have a choice which way to orientate our desires. Therefore we have sadhana bhakti so we can at least make some effort during certain part of the day towards orientating our desires towards the spiritual, true conception of life.
It just makes it that much more urgent for us that have this information to get out there and assist these people, because otherwise it seems to me that they don't have the ability to choose.
They don't. Well, they have a choice. They can go to hell by jet plane, or they can take a taxi there. That's their choice. Or they want to kill themselves by shooting themselves or hanging themselves. Because more or less that's the choice offered. There's very little pious activities being propagated. I don't even think people help little old ladies across the street anymore. And that's not really necessarily a pious activity if the little old lady is going across the street to rob the bank. Then you get the reaction for her robbing the bank. Or even going across the street to McDonald's, then you'll get part of her reaction for eating McDonald's hamburger.
This morning I was having a conversation with a friend and he was telling me his credit report was 755. And I said, well, what does that mean? That you can go out and buy a lot of stuff you can't afford? That you'll buy things that you'll be making payments on from now on? I mean, why buy anything at all? If you can't afford to pay cash for it, then you probably don't really need it, do you? And he said, well, that's not the point. I said, well, my grandmother didn't have a credit score, yet she lived to be 107 because she didn't stress out about her credit score. And I said, think about it. I mean, a lot of the things that you impose on yourself, you bring on yourself, just because you feel pressured to do so from, you know, advertising and the world we live in. And so why not detach from it and just see how different life can be? And he looked at me like, this guy makes sense, but I'm not going to agree with him.
It's called Maya.
That's a good example.
Okay, we'll stop there. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.
His Holiness Srila Prahladananda Swami Maharaj Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakti.